Yep, it's the Zeal Palace theme from the Chrono Trigger video game, Super Nintendo. Play it on an emulator if it's before your time. All right, here's part two of the Canucks Army podcast, episode one. So this is episode 1A, featuring the second half of my conversation with Jason Botchford. Enjoy. Let's pivot and talk some Bure. Obviously a hot issue this year in Vancouver. With the press conference that he gave in Vancouver the day after the deadline, and the applause at the Edmonton Oilers game when he stood up in the owner's box during the game, certainly right. Looks at this point like his number being retired is an inevitability. Are there any hurdles that you're aware of that are still left to be cleared on this front?
Not to my understanding, because the owners wanted this. And has wanted it for a long time. And honestly, Francesco hatched this plan with Gino Ojek. Those two guys came up with the idea, came up with the plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring Pavel back. And it was before the Hall of Fame dinner in Toronto that they all had, kind of big summit here, meet dinner that they had last year. And Francesco, no one could be totally sure how, like, there's all kinds of rumors that Pavel didn't want to ever come back, that he didn't want to be honored. I talked to Pavel. He said he hasn't been back since he was retired. I know that there was a rumor that he was here during the Olympics, but that's what he told me. Mm-hmm. And Francesco, he used to hang with these guys. Back in the day, he owned a hotel when Ojek and Bure were on a team. And Ojek had a place at the hotel. He'd live there. And these guys would kind of commiserate at the bar and hang out and share stories and all of that. And he has always wanted this to happen. And I think in general, if an owner wants something to happen, mm-hmm. it's going to happen. You know, it's got to happen. And I think that the number of people over the years who have gone up to Francesco and said, kind of, we want Pavel to be, we want the number to be retired, we want him to be honored, all of that had an impact that kind of led up to last year, Hall of Fame dinner, and Francesco finally putting out that olive branch and laying out the plan with Gino there and saying, like, look, here's what we'd like to do. And I don't think that they were ever sure. Like, I think that the last hurdle, honestly, was that reaction at Rogers Arena. I don't think that they knew. And in fact, talking to them, they didn't know. Like, Francesco told me that, Pavel told me that, Gino told me that. They had no idea how that crowd was going to react. Because, like, you know, like, the issue has become almost endlessly political. Like, I think that even when it does happen, and I do think it's going to happen next year, even when it does happen, there will still people who will say it shouldn't happen. It won't be. And there were those who said that about Marcus too, right? Like there was
oh, absolutely
a percentage, good chunk of people who said his career hasn't been good enough. Mm-hmm. And with Pavel, it was like he hasn't loved the city enough. And so I think that that will always exist, but I think that that kind of cheer ovation, standing ovation, lasted a long time. If you were in the arena that night, it was it was one of those special nights. It was one of those special mm-hmm. moments that you kind of you get chills, right? You get a little chill thinking, you know, that this is a pretty cool moment in the history of the Vancouver Canucks, and Francesco didn't know how that was going to go, and if you can see the images back then, he's got this huge smile on his face. He's in the background. He honestly looks like the happiest guy in that arena, and I really think he was, because this is his baby, and when that arena exploded like that, he knew that he had it. He knew that he was going to be able to do it, and there's a three-person board member.
So this is the mysterious...
Jewison's on it. And I talked to Smeal about it, and he's like, look, this is going to happen, man.
Yeah. So, sorry. This mysterious retirement panel, what are they officially called?
What are they? I can't remember. It's a three-person committee, and I can't remember what they're called.
And it's Norman Jewison, the filmmaker, who's actually the provost at my alma mater. There's Stan Smeal, and who's the third guy?
Jim Robson.
And so do we know who was holding out against the Bure retirement, a la Pat Quinn, on the Hall of Fame committee?
I can't say that. I mean, I'm not at liberty to...
Yeah, yeah, totally. Worth asking, though.
but it has been at large in public among the fans, among the people that you and I talk to and interact with.
Yeah.
You can get into debates anytime about it. I think that that's also been the case within the Canucks organization. And, I can tell you that, I talked to Sneal about this, and basically he said, as time goes by, the issues that were there seem a lot smaller for both sides, for Bure's side, from our side. And you learn to appreciate the great moments a lot more. And Sneal talked about when the team practiced at Britannia Rink, and they would be filled with place with people coming to see Bure, and the way that it kind of connected not only Vancouver fans together, but the entire province was kind of wrapped up in this thing. And at some point, that supersedes all the other crap that went in with Bure's kind of entanglement with the management at the time. That all seems small when you look at the bigger image. And look, I'm from Toronto, and when I arrived in Vancouver in 2005, the one constant I've always admired and kind of appreciated about Canucks fans is the way they talk when they say, "I saw Bure do this." Mm-hmm. Whatever it was a breakaway goal against the Flames. It was the first time they saw the first shift they saw him take. It was seeing him for tenure rank. Whatever it is, right? They would say that their eyes would be big like saucers, and they'd be saying, I don't have words for it. You can't appreciate what it was like for me to see Bure do this. I drove 3-4 hours to see a Canucks game, and I saw Bure do that. And it has made me want to have seen all of these things. I want to have been there in the rink, the first time that he had that shift. I want to have had season tickets to see Bure play living in Vancouver. I feel that I have missed out in my life. And for me, that's more important than anything. That is he's a Hall of Fame player. He has these moments that have enriched people's lives to the point where they're memories that are going to last decades. All of this, to me, is bigger than, the fact that he did not get along with management and, felt that he got screwed over by management and then wanted out.
Yeah, now, I was 7 years old during the 93-94 Cup run. Game 3 of the Maple Leafs, Canucks Western Conference Final, or I guess it was the Norris Conference Final or whatever. I was there, and it was my birthday. My dad took me to the game, and afterwards, him and my sister sort of made me a card from Bure, right? And I was stupid and 7 years old, and I was, so excited that Pavel Bure had taken the time to write me a birthday card. So, I experienced Bure at that moment where hockey especially feels so much so much larger than life itself, right? And for me, I'm on record at Canucks Army, with my zero influence, saying that I don't think you can retire the number of a guy who requested a trade out of your organization. I mean, I just think if it ends like that, with a public trade request that sort of hamstrings your leverage, I think the organization honoring him on par with Lyndon Smeal and Naslund, all of whom he was significantly better than as a player, significantly, right, night and day. I still think that's a tough call, or a call that certainly I don't make if I own the franchise. That said, I'll be.
So then, do all guys that are retired, not all great players that have a lasting impact are going to be Trevor Linden, are going to be Marcus Naslund?
Yeah.
You can't just have those type, I don't think anyway, you can't just have those type of guys as the guys that you honor as an organization. It looks, from me, not being a Canucks fan, I didn't grow up a Canucks fan,
yep,
it looks absurd from the outside, yep, a lot of us, to say, Lyndon is up there, but the Hall of Fame, the guy in the Hockey Hall of Fame, you're not going to honor because of a squabble with management, and
yep,
management wasn't fair to him.
No, they weren't.
Why not say I want to trade? You know what I mean? Like, that's essentially what Roberto Luongo has said. Mm-hmm. He wants a trade. He wanted out. He told them at the end of last year. And in some way, at some point, he's got to be honored by the organization.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's another reason that I was sort of against this is, you know, you've already got three numbers retired and zero cups, right? At minimum, yeah. At minimum, you now have to retire three more, right? Because you have to retire Henrik and Daniel, and you have to retire Bure. I mean, those aren't, that's, you know, at this point, that's not debatable, because Bure's, I mean, I don't think Bure's number should be retired. It's going to be. I'm not going to be upset about it. I'm going to be happy for him. I'm going to be happy for the franchise. But, you know, I wouldn't do it. But, so, this is a team, an organization that's going to have six numbers retired, six jersey banners up in the rafters before they have a single cup banner. I mean, at some point, that's a little embarrassing, right?
I agree. Like, personally, like, if it's my organization, I would say, look, win a cup, guys, and then we'll talk about, you know, retiring numbers. It's just the way I would look at it. Like,
yeah.
Get a ring, get a banner, get a real banner, like one that counts. Get a ring, a trophy, one that counts, and then we'll go about retiring guys' numbers.
Yeah.
But look, they've already the path is already there, right? To me, if you go Smeal, Naslund, Linden, yeah, you're right. You got to go to the cities, and to me, you also got you can't keep your Hall of Fame guy out.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Drives me crazy.
That makes sense to me. I still don't think they should do it. Partly because I think if you exceed a ratio of 2.5 jersey banners for every President's Trophy banner, right. You know, that's really just humiliating. All right, let's move back to hockey, or the current Canucks at least. You know, I wrote something about this. Some people thought that I was taking a shot at you when I wrote it. I wasn't. I was just writing mathy stuff because that's all I do. Do you think there's something about Mason Raymond's game that will legitimately prevent him from ever being productive in the postseason in his career?
it's such a kind of nebulous question. I can't pinpoint guys' games and say, you know, what happens in the playoffs with these guys?
So, yeah,
what goes wrong? I can tell you that in the 2011 playoffs, right? I would have conversations in the stands with Mike Gillis, for instance, and he would say things like, in the series against Nashville, watch Mason Raymond. He is going to have a fantastic series because of his speed. And he is going to take advantage of those defensemen. He said the same thing heading into San Jose. He said the same thing heading to Boston. And you know what? I watched Mason Raymond. And I had an open concept of what Mason Raymond could bring to the table. Believing, yeah, I did believe that against the Boston Bruins, a team that was not among the fleetest of foot, in the NHL,
yeah.
He'd be extremely effective. I believed it against the Nashville Predators. I believed it against the San Jose Sharks. It just never happened. And but what has happened lately? Like with Mason Raymond, I see him, kind of going back to that old, like last night a couple of times, pulling up like 35, 40 feet away from the net when he could drive it, when he could get into a better scoring area. I haven't seen the effective Mason Raymond that I saw in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in the past 3-4 weeks of the year.
No, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. And sure enough, right around the corner, it's the playoffs. Now, in that 2011 run, two goals in 24 games. And that's a lot of times playing alongside Ryan Kessler, who, you know, in that series against Nashville had one of the greatest series that you know, any of us have really ever seen a Vancouver Canucks have.
Yeah.
So what happens to Mason Raymond in the playoffs? And I know that you can point to the numbers and say, well, what did you have? You got seven goals in 56 games. And you had 16 points in that time.
Yeah.
There are reasons that the LA Kings are a better playoff team than they are a regular season team. I think that the game is called differently. It is. That's what I believe. I think that the game slows down a little bit. I think it's harder for those smaller, faster guys to make an impact. And I have not seen a game like those first 2 months of the season that we saw this year, kind of reminiscent of the first half of 2009, 4 years. Mason Rayne was kind of a dominant top six player, but I concede he was that. But he was great in the first couple of months of the year. I've never seen him be like that for more than, you know, a moment, a period or two over the course of the playoffs. So I contend that the history shows us, and for me having watched the games, that Mason Raymond disappears when the playoffs happen. That he's not there. You can't rely on him to be effective in the postseason. That's, you know, me without doing what you do, without looking at the stats, without crunching the possession numbers and the Corsi, that's what I've gleaned from what I've watched the games.
Yeah.
Now you're telling me does Corsi match what I'm seeing? Does it match what I've noticed here?
No. I think Mason Raymond is basically when he's on, like this season, even recently when he hasn't been playing that well, he's basically a supporting piece, right? I mean, there's no one who's going to build a second line around Mason Raymond. But, you know, he has in the past proven that he can help a player like Ryan Kesler drive possession. What he hasn't done is prove that he can help a player like Ryan Kesler drive offense. And when in 10-11, right, that whole line, I mean, Higgins, Kesler, and Raymond, they shot like 4.5% for the on-ice percentage for the playoffs. I mean, they just couldn't buy a break. And that's unsustainable over a 25. I mean, that, you know, that happens over 25 games. But over 50, it doesn't, right? At some point, there's a correction. His shooting percentage is two-thirds of in the playoffs of what it is in the regular season. And though you're right, and absolutely the mix of harder competition, less penalties being called, you know, the playoffs are a different game. I wouldn't debate that for a moment. What I would say, though, is that that doesn't impact necessarily the percentages. I mean, we will still see sort of normal percentages over a long period of playoff games. I mean, that's just what we see with guys who've played 100-plus playoff games. And so I generally think Mason Raymond's due some bounces in the postseason. You know, that said, he's gone. I can't tell whether or not his disappearance is unique to him right now or whether or not it's, you know, him playing with Andrew Ebbett on a third line that's completely overmatched. I would say that he probably had as bad a week as any individual Canuck. Based on our scoring chance data, I mean, he's just getting murdered right now. But that's sort of the way that it's going for the middle two lines for the Canucks. And, you know, it certainly doesn't look like they have the depth on their second or their third line to really get by anyone hard or anyone serious this postseason. Would you sort of agree with that?
Yeah. And it gets back to what we talked about at the beginning of all this. Zach Cassian is not an impact player. They're screwed. Right? Like they really needed him this year. And that's, you know, another point that we were talking about earlier is chasing Ryan Klo and listening to these ridiculous contract demands.
Mm-hmm.
They need that guy. They need that type of guy. And they were hoping that Zach Cassian would kind of blossom into that guy this year. He just hasn't. And he's just not there right now. And I think that, you know, a couple of weeks ago I was saying, like, you got one shot here to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to say, well, we're going to play Zach with Kesler. We're going to play him. We're going to give him all kinds of minutes down the stretch here. And we're going to hope that something rounds into form
with
this guy, this combo, and that they have chemistry. But if there is nothing there, if Kesler and Cassian don't have anything together and they can't drive play during the playoffs, if they can't win their matchups during the postseason, I think they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can beat the Wild. I think they can get clobbered by the Blues, and they can get clobbered by most of these teams. Like, in the first round series, I'm not sure if there's another team other than the Wild that I'm not picking the other team.
Yeah, I you know, the thing is, the great equalizer will be Corey Schneider. I mean, that guy has been on the craziest run over the last 15 games. I mean, it's something to see. This guy is this bet that he's a star player is looking pretty good for the Canucks right now. He's been lights out, and I think that a game against Detroit was his signature game. I mean, I've never seen him that good.
Yeah.
And that play on France in late, right, where he not just stopped, he didn't just stop the puck, but then he cleared the rebound when his defenders were slow to react, right?
Right.
And then stopped all three shootout attempts, single-handedly basically clinching the playoffs for the Canucks, which is just too appropriate. Yeah, I mean, at the moment the Canucks look to me, with Derek Roy and Kessler both getting it fed to them, the Canucks look to me like a one-line team with outrageous goaltending. It's looking pretty grim. So, you know, with that, if
one more line, that's one more line. They didn't really have a line last year, right? I mean, before Daniel came
that's
back,
true.
Against the Kings, they were a no-line team, but and Corey Schneider was outrageous. I mean, he made 97 saves on 101 shots against the Kings, which, you know, we all saw were, you know, dominant the rest of that postseason run, even though the level of competition wasn't very high. I think that Corey Schneider, I mean, amazing, unbelievable, like, year this has been with the thick with drama, the goalie situation, trying to become a number one starter. I was talking to him about this the other day. Like, could you imagine if he was struggling at the trade deadline? And, you know, just from a Canucks management point of view, right, like, we're going through all of this, like, dealing with this whole Luongo thing. We're getting embarrassed right at the deadline. Humiliated, not only behind the scenes, but then later kind of outwardly in front of the scenes. Like, you know, everyone is criticizing them for not being able to trade Luongo. It looks embarrassing that they're kind of just handing him off for, you know, here, we want a backup goalie in 2 seconds. Imagine if they're sitting there going through all that, Corey Schneider was doing what he was doing at the beginning of the year, and which was, wasn't quite on. You'd be sitting there going like, man, we're doing all this for this guy. But now, and at the deadline, and up till now, you understand it, right? You understand why it goes, like, and Grant, this goes back to early last season. It goes back to, these two goalies working with Melanson, and just the speed with which Corey was able to pick up every technique that mm-hmm. him and Rolly were going through, and Rolly kind of behind the scenes saying, like, this guy is the real deal. This guy is going to be a star. And I think that they always kind of believed it, but over the course of last year, they were convinced, and it's paying off right now. I mean, he looks like the next superstar goalie in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about basically what you said earlier. Is there a team that I'm picking the Canucks to beat in the first round among their three most likely opponents in the Kings, Sharks, and Blues, right? And I was thinking, the Canucks kind of look like a soft three seed. I wonder if those teams would rather match up with Vancouver than each other. And then I sort of concluded probably not, because they'd have to face Schneider. I mean, I really think, that we all know you might as well call the NHL playoffs goalie. And I do think the Canucks are going into it with the best goaltender in the West. I mean, I don't think I don't think that should be that controversial. I mean, the only guy who's had a better season is probably Antti Niemi. I think he's on a bit of an unsustainable run.
Right. He's going to be really seriously. He has had but right now, I think anyone would take Corey Schneider over Niemi.
Yeah, I mean, anyone in their right mind, at least. All right, so if the Canucks do go out in the first round for the second year in a row, which, seems it's a reasonable possibility, especially if they have no right-handed defenseman in the lineup, is it time, do you think, to significantly retool?
Well, I don't see, like, they're stuck. Like, how do they retool? Like,
yeah.
In what way? Like, give me an example of a retooling.
No, I mean, there's not much you can do because they've got all the no trade clauses, right? I mean, you basically you'd be selling at 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, I don't, like, this is their team, man. Like, I don't see them I think the one impact trade they got that they would have in their arsenal would be, like, an Alex Edler trade. But, again, does that get you any further? I mean, even if you go out and you ransack the Philadelphia Flyers, you're not getting a defenseman back, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So does that make you any better? And I'm not sure it does. it's the only, like, if we wipe out all the contracts and take away all the no trades, and then you just say, okay, you can do whatever you want here. You can trade Ryan Kessler, you can trade Alex Edler, like, but the world's your oyster. The one thing that I could think that would dramatically change the lineup would be an Edler trade. Other than that, I don't see you have any chance. Like, well, where's the reboot? What other opportunity is there?
Yeah, no, there's not a lot. Though, you know, if the team started losing, I think you'd find all those guys with no trade clauses much more amenable.
Okay, but pretend there's no trade clauses. Who do you think that they could trade and get a package back for that could potentially dramatically impact them in the next couple of years?
I mean, the only thing you could really do would be move the Sedins, right? I mean, that would be, you'd try and move the Sedins because you could probably at least get good value from a team looking to, you know, basically acquire a fully functioning top line in one fell swoop. I'd assume they'd still have significant trade value, even with only 1 year left on their deal. But yeah, I mean, this is...
Well, okay, now all of a sudden, now you don't have a number one line.
Yeah.
Now maybe you get a center back in return. So now Ryan Kessler becomes your number one center, and whoever you get back in your the Sedins trade becomes your number two guy. And then you go into a free agent market where there's nothing there.
Like, yeah.
There's just not going to be, there's zero beyond zero. That's one of the reasons that they signed Higgins to that extension, the 2.5, that takes, what is it, taking 35 years old or 36 years old, right?
Yeah, there's significant risk on the tail end.
This is a team that you know, originally their idea was we're not gonna lock up guys once they turn 32, 33.
Mm-hmm.
But then and they kept with that for a while. But now all of a sudden in the past year we've seen them lock up Burrows long term past the age of 32. Same thing with Chris Higgins. And they looked at what's going to happen in the free agent market, and they were convinced that Chris Higgins was going to be able to walk into that free agent market and get $3.5 million a year.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't going to be a lot of competition. There wasn't going to be a lot of other – I mean, there was going to be tons of competition for a market that was, like, symbol small.
Yeah.
So when they saw that, they were like, look, you can't go out the free agent. You can't replace Chris Higgins. How do you replace Chris Higgins? You go in the market, you're signing the guy $3.54 million a year. So they had to give him term.
Yeah.
And I think that there's that realization that, you know, even more so, that this is their team. They're stuck with this team. And you know, they can try to pull off deals for a Clarkson or a Klo or a Torres. And I'm sure next year at the trade deadline, it will be the same kind of thing. But you're not going to find the answers. You're not going to repair your you know, top line, and you're not going to repair the middle heart of your order very easily in the free agent market.
So short of replacing the coaches, you see this team as having their hands tied beyond that in terms of a major renovation this summer.
Yeah, for the most part, like I just don't see it. Like I don't.
No, I agree.
You know,
with you.
I see some kind of, you know, tooling around the edges, maybe getting a third line guy, and you know, hoping. That's why guys like Zach Cassian are so important, Drance.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they really needed him to become something right now. And he's not that something.
No, not yet. I mean, there's no doubt. Like, it's not a good bet that he'll be a useful top six contributor in the playoffs. That's a loser bet for sure at this point.
Right. And my concern is that here at this time, are we saying the same thing about Zach Cassian? Like, is he still going to be... And guys can do whatever they want, you know, when they're on this team or on any team, they can go be doing whatever. But when it bleeds into what's happening, where you got to be sent down to Chicago, where there are whispers all around the NHL about, you know, what he was up to in Buffalo, and is the same crap happening in Vancouver? It's a legitimate concern that I would be having, that I do have.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, now that we've depressed all the Canucks fans listening, let's end this off with one more depressing question. You were pretty much convinced all season long that Roberto Luongo would remain in or would not remain in Vancouver past the trade deadline.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
and I contend that by that final offer, I was right.
Yeah, you absolutely. They were all but willing to give him away, it appears.
Right.
You know, in the 10 minutes. Before the deadline. This summer, Do you see Luongo still being moved, or will the team or Luongo himself be forced to consider something more drastic, be it a buyout or not reporting or what have you?
No, I think they can move him. I just think that he's too good. He's got too, his resume is too rich. Mm-hmm. That things will happen. So many musical chairs are going to happen over the goalies in the league over the next, heading into draft day, that they're going to be able to move him. I'm convinced that they're going to be able to get something for him. And, everyone will go on their merry way. But that said, could a buyout be an option? Yeah, it's got to be an option. It's mm-hmm. got to be, you got to look into that. Although I do think that if they were to waive Roberto Luongo, he would get picked up. Some team out there would pick him up. And I know if that happened earlier in the season, or like for instance last year in the offseason, it would have been like Columbus or Edmonton. There was lots of interest in Luongo. The interest was the problem. There are two dates really where things happen mm-hmm. in the NHL. You got the trade deadline and you got draft day.
Yeah.
And if you don't make a deal on one of those days, you're screwed. Like, it's very difficult to make things happen. It's just that the league is not built. General managers aren't built to construct deals in the spaces in between. It just mm-hmm. doesn't happen very often. A couple weeks before the trade deadline, you see things start to pick up.
Yeah.
When last year at the draft, when Lou said, and he was told behind the scenes, for whoever it was, told mm-hmm. Loopy, his agent, that Florida was coming. And at that point, when he had that information, and it all seemed reasonable, right? He would go to the Canucks and he'd say, look, let's just wait to see how this Florida thing plays out. Mm-hmm. And it's not him saying it. Lupien, who is very good at getting his clients what they want. So his job is to get along with Florida, right? That's where his client wants to play. So he goes to the Canucks and say, let's wait for this Florida thing to play out before, we pull the trigger on anything else, before we're willing to wait to go anywhere else. And the Canucks say, okay. And at the time, everyone thinks that they got all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. Looking back, though, now, that was the critical day. That was the day to get it done, because that's when deals are made. And I think that this year, at the draft, that's where it's got to happen, no matter what. You got to go into that saying, we've got to deal. And look, there is interest. It's not like there's no interest in Luke. There is interest in him.
Yeah.
Philadelphia was interested in him on that final day. And there were points, over those couple of days where, the Canucks were thinking that they could get it done with Philly, even though their whole situation with Przegalov and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that's not the way Philly was thinking, but they were dancing around it. There were phone calls being made between those two sides leading into it. There were other teams involved, too. So there is interest there. I think that they can pull it off without, having to pay $1 million a year for the rest of this contract, or $1.5 million on their cap. Mm-hmm. But, you're right. I can't say here. I thought it was 100% slam dunk. If you asked me this question at the beginning of the year, that he would be gone by now and they would get something significant back. And, how can you say that right now? You just saw how it all played out. So I think that as an option, you have to still consider that buyout as an option.
And thus concludes part two of the Canucks Army Podcast's first episode of the relaunch. Hope you enjoyed. Let us know what we can do better, and we'll see you again next week. Cheers.